Good morning and welcome again, Dan Smith from the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality. Dan, you are the North Idaho Air Quality Coordinator.
That's correct.
And you're joining us again relatively soon after we just had a very good talk about air quality in general. And we went on to talk a bit more about other factors that influence air quality. And one very big one is wood stoves. So I've invited you back to talk about that.
That's great, Julie. I appreciate it.
Yes. But first of all, just tell us a short, tiny little snippet of how you came to be in this job, because it's not exactly where you started out. You had kind of an interesting background and ended up talking about air quality.
I've got a basic background in natural resource management, both from the University of Wisconsin at River Falls. I got to put a plug in for the Falcons. And then also University of Montana. And so I did my master's research on, it was called recreation resource management, basically, but the upshot of it was I did it on elk hunter behavior. So it was more like recreation sociology.
Yeah.
And it was really kind of a different way of doing things. From there, I went on to manage state parks in Montana and in Idaho for the better part of 20 years. And then when I moved to Coeur d'Alene, I was looking for a new sort of a natural resource-based stuff and got a job with DEQ working on air quality. I don't have a whole lot of background in air, but I look at it this way. It's just another natural resource. So how could I be too far off from the forestry-related and soils and all the other kind of things you did? I just moved into the atmosphere. I just, went up.
It is a very important environmental quality that we all need. And I think you've done a wonderful job helping people understand what's important. I've really enjoyed our interviews.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. So today, though, we've decided we're calling this talk wood stoves. And first question that I have for you is, why would anyone use wood heat today? There's lots of alternatives.
Well, there are, but there's lots of good reasons. One of the biggest ones, I think, is in North Idaho, we have this tradition of being self-sufficient. We have a local fuel source right here, right in our backyard, that we can go out and we can actually harvest ourselves. A lot of kids, grow up learning how to cut firewood and what to do with it, how to cut it and split it, and it's hard work. It heats you three ways. It heats when you cut it down, it heats when you split it, and it heats when you finally burn it. But there's also a lot of other reasons for it. From a DEQ point of view, it's a carbon neutral source. We've got a tree that's growing out there. For every tree we cut down, we're probably planting a few extras. They're growing up. They're sequestering the carbon that the tree has stored over the course of its life, while at the same time we're burning the carbon in the wood to produce heat in our home. So it's, some say it's totally carbon neutral. I don't know if I swallow that, but, that's kind of an idea. But it's a great source. You can get it locally. You don't have to worry about importing it from Iran or Tennessee,
right,
or someplace like that, Kentucky. You've got a local fuel source right here.
Yeah, and it can be affordable if you're able to do some of that work yourself. And I know in a few minutes, we're going to talk about the differences in wood stoves and how it can be, not very hard on the environment and how it can be more hard on the environment. But before we get there, should we just talk about how wood stoves work?
Sure. First of all, a wood stove is a radiant heat device. It works just like the sun. When you're out in the sun, you stand out in bright sunlight and it feels really nice and toasty warm, and it can be too hot really fast. Then you step out into the shade. All right. At that point, you're dealing with just the air temperature. And so there's a difference between the conductive heat that goes on from contact with something hot, which includes air, or radiant heat, which is where that heat is actually coming straight through from the energy source, whether that's the sun or your wood stove, and heating the objects around you. So the way that the Earth's temperature gets regulated is at night it gets cold because the sun goes away and removes that radiant heat source, and it takes a while for it to cool off, right?
Right.
That's because the objects on the Earth itself, the trees, you, me, animals, we all are absorbing that heat during the day and giving it off at night. Same thing holds true with your wood stove. Your wood stove heats the objects in the room. Doesn't necessarily heat the air. The air gets heated up by the objects conducting the heat to that. So it's a different kind of heat. People call it like that deep bone warming heat that really works. And it's true because it's actually heating you. And sometimes your couch or your easy chair or, you know, whatever. And so it really is it's a different kind of heat. Radiant heat is a marvelous source of heat.
Yeah, and so it's a source of heat that isn't going to just blow warm air all around an entire room because it's, as we say, radiating. And so it's good for certain situations.
Right.
Like,
it doesn't work everywhere. A good example is it's a great room heater. People who are trying to heat their entire house with a wood stove are probably not doing it correctly. It's a warm spot in your house. And for anybody who burns a wood stove, you know that sometimes it gets too hot in there and you end up opening a window or something. But expecting the heat from the radiant heat from your wood stove in, say, you know, your living room or your kitchen to radiate all the way back to the closed off part of your home, your bedrooms, your bathrooms, places like that, that's not very realistic because that air has to be transported all the way back there to warm those places. So it doesn't work all that well as a whole house heat source. Now, you can add fans to them, and you can add a bunch of different things and run your furnace, which circulates the air around the room. But it's still not all that great a whole house heat source.
Yes, but there's so many ways it can be a nice supplemental, for example, in the rooms that you spend your most time in.
Right.
It can be great.
So if you have it in like your living areas, your kitchen, places that have pipes that can't be frozen, you know, I mean, in the wintertime, we're all worried about that. It's nice to have that supplemental heat. It's also nice to have a heat source that you can depend on. You know, if we have an electric outage, your furnace isn't working, whatever, it's awfully nice to have that backup right there. A lot of people in North Idaho, they're concerned about that, you know, because periodically we have these electrical outages, and there we are, stuck without heat, and
right.
Pipes freeze, and we end up paying through the nose for repairs afterwards, and that's not that much fun.
Yes, and it's certainly a cozier alternative than having a generator you got to start up and listen to if the heat goes out. It's a nicer alternative in many
ways. Quieter, much quieter.
Yes, that's right. Well, knowing what you just said, what's the best way to make a wood stove work in the home?
Well, I would recommend, first of all, if you're building a house, build it with sort of open architecture, meaning you don't want, because admittedly, the heat is going to be stuck in just that room that you have. If you have areas where it does allow the air from one room to the other to move readily, easily, that's the best way to do that. So, you know, you see a lot of these big cabins that might have a loft up above and things like that. The heat will rise, but it takes a while for it to do that. Heating your basement and expecting it to rise up, you know, up a narrow stairway or something like that, that's fairly, it doesn't work very well. And it doesn't soak through floors very well or anything like that. You know, in the old days, I don't know if you remember this, Julie, but I do, they used to have floor vents. And the radiated heat from down below would go up above.
I had one in my childhood house. It went right up into my bedroom.
I did too. My first house had radiators, the old iron radiators. And you know what? They worked. But those little vents were what allowed it to go upstairs into the bedrooms and keep the bedrooms warm. Same thing would hold true with a wood stove. Radiant heat, whether it's a radiator or a wood stove, are the same kind of thing. So make sure that your air is able to circulate. You can put fans in there and things like that to move the air around, and that's a viable way of doing it. But again, that's electrical and something you can't count on in the dead of winter when electricity is more iffy.
Yes, and then you are adding electricity into the equation, so you're paying for a little bit of electricity with your fans, and there's some noise associated.
Well, and I'm here to tell you that the electricity guys are out to get you. They're going to sell you electricity no matter what.
They are. Well, all right. So we've talked a little bit about where the wood stove may want to be in the house, and sort of how to make that work and what a floor plan might look like. But what about stoves? And I think this is a very big part of our talk today, because the last time that you were here, we were talking about inversions in the winter and inefficient wood stoves and a program that you worked on. And so to help people improve or upgrade stoves that were really polluting. And so,
yeah.
So how do we know what is the right type of stove? Let's talk about that.
Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the history of stoves. Stoves, you know, the open fireplace, and we all remember the open fireplace from our childhood, the crackling fire, or the pictures of, you know, Abe Lincoln learning to read by an open fire while his mom is cooking on a pot of stew in the open fireplace. Horrible way to heat your home. As that heat, yes, it does heat the area right around you, but the air circulation sucks all the heat right out the chimney. So it's a waste of your time. It'll warm you if you're standing right in front of it, just like a campfire will if you're standing right in front of it. But most of that heat goes right out the up the chimney. So the first stoves, the old Ben Franklin stoves or whatever, the iron box with a fire in it, was a way of controlling that. It helped control the air that goes into the stove. It does produce a radiant heat, and it was a much more efficient way of doing things. A fireplace is maybe 10% efficient, if you want to call it that, if you know, for a heating device. Now, the iron box with a fire in it is maybe on the outside 40 to 50%. And that's generous.
Big improvement, though.
Big improvement over about 10, right.
Yes.
So after that, you come into the various stoves that were really popular back in the early 70s when we had our first, remember the old split wood, not Adams, bumper sticker that was out there? Same kind of concept. But those had features in there that would allow the burning wood to circulate more. The way a stove is efficient, it takes time and turbulence of the air within the stove in order to warm that metal on the outside, which is what is radiating the heat to you. So those stoves got to be a little bit more efficient. That's where I say they're up to about 50% efficient. The Fishers, the Schraders, those were great old wood stoves, and they were built, man, I'm telling you. They had some real steel around them. So they lasted forever, which is kind of a problem because they also are pretty polluting. All of the old-style iron box with a fire in it stoves emitted anywhere from 60 to 80 grams of particulate matter every hour.
Is that a lot?
That is a lot.
Okay.
That is a lot. To put this in, and the other thing that goes along with that, is they were, like I say, maybe on the outside 50, maybe 55 to 60%, if you're lucky, burning the right wood, efficient. So, A, you're burning a lot of firewood to get a lot of heat, and B, you're putting a lot of pollution into your particular airshed.
And C, there are a lot of them still around here.
There are piles of them around. They're everywhere. Because they were built so stout, they're just really durable machines. And I kind of admire that, but at the same time, I kind of wish they'd wear out, which is kind of a bad thing to say. But here's the deal. The new stoves, ever since 1988, whether it's the EPA, Oregon, actually the state of Oregon started this, regulating wood stove emissions. And what that did is that stimulated wood stove manufacturers to come up with new and different ways of reducing the pollution while making the stove more efficient at heating your house. So Blaze King was a real leader with that. They came out with a catalytic stove. Some of you guys probably have heard of the old Earth stove. They were, you know, marketed as a real non-polluting stove. And they used a catalytic combustor inside there. The problem with that is their catalytic combustors weren't very good. So they would wear out.
Tell us what that means, a catalytic combustor.
A catalytic combustor, just like the catalytic converter in your car, what it does is through a series of baffles coated with interesting things, you know, platinum, palladium. This is why people are stealing your catalytic converter in your car, because they're full of these valuable minerals. Anyway, what that does is that allows the smoke in your stove to burn at about 800 degrees versus a regular fireplace where it has to burn at about 1100 to 1200 degrees. So you can burn it at a lower temperature. What does that mean? That means you can shut your stove down in the evening, and instead of burning at that high temperature, which is a real fast combustion rate, you can slow it down significantly by about a third. So instead of an 8-hour burn period, you might get a 12 to 15-hour burn period.
And not get your house so heated up and not have all that smoke.
That's
happening.
Correct.
I see.
So a catalytic converter is a really nice way of cleaning up your air as well as extending your burn times. Now, there are other technologies as well. There's a new, well, not new, but you can put in what are called secondary burn tubes. And basically, it's an air induction system that is positioned in such a way, along with a baffle within the stove, that introduces air into the smoke column within the stove. So at that point, you're starting to burn again. You're burning that smoke. Because what is smoke? Smoke is valuable, burnable materials that has just been vaporized and put it into the smoke column. If that stays in the stove and is able to be combined with oxygen at the right place, then it will burn and it'll be much more efficient and much less polluting. So that works out great. Now, the third kind of new stove that came out is a combination of the two. It's a hybrid stove, and that has both the air induction tubes in there as well as a catalytic combustor, and they're super efficient.
Tell us how efficient.
83% in some cases. That's really high. Look at some of the old gas furnaces that we have. 83% is pretty darn nice.
Yeah.
So these stoves are really good. But the best part about it is how much they've reduced the emissions into our atmosphere from 60 to 80 grams of particulate matter per hour. The new EPA approved stoves are limited to 2 grams an hour.
That's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. And because they're so much more efficient, they say that they're about 60% more efficient than the old iron box. So to make the math easier, let's say that you're burning 10 cords of wood every year with your old stove. You'll burn 6 with a new stove and keep your house just as warm and be better able to regulate the heat in your home. So there's great big advantages to having one of the new stoves. I always tell people, when you look at the cost of firewood, whether you're buying it, whether you're doing anything, do you take into account your chiropractor bill? Because you got to haul that wood several times back and forth. And, I'm getting to the age where humping firewood around just isn't as much fun as it used to be.
I couldn't agree more. Having lived the life of a house heated by wood, I don't currently, but I have. And, it leads me to the next question, which is that these stoves sound much more developed and complicated. I suppose they're expensive.
Yes, they are. And one of the other things that we did, and to give you an idea why DEQ is interested in this, the Department of Environmental Quality is, of course, we're responsible for monitoring all the air pollution. And as we talked about 2 weeks ago, we've got all these monitors all over the place, and we have a monitor in every one of the 5 northern counties that I'm responsible for. And we regulate that every day. And I look at that every day, and I report the results. So when we have forest fires like we're having now, if we have some air quality issues, I issue an air quality advisory. But prior to having this job, I was in charge of a wood stove changeout program down in the Pinehurst area in the Silver Valley. I exchanged approximately half of all the wood stoves down there. I replaced over 200 wood stoves. That made a huge difference. We went from being not in attainment with the national air quality standards into attainment for the first time in 25 years.
And that's very important. We're finding more and more that people are harmed by this, by smoky air, and it's whether you might not even be an unhealthy person, and it's not
right.
Good for people.
Well, and anytime the pollutant that we measure is called particulate matter. Particulate matter comes in various sizes, like anything. Think of it as like sand is a particulate, but the stuff that comes out in smoke is very, very fine. And so we look at particles that are less than 2.5 microns in diameter. That is so small that it can actually go through your lung and be absorbed into your bloodstream and can cause all kinds of issues. Now, we all know that if you're smoking cigarettes or tobacco of any form or other things that are now legal in adjacent states, that stuff goes straight into your lungs and gets all over. And it can't possibly be good for you. The tars, the nicotines, the chemicals that we're putting into our body is not good. Same thing holds true with wood smoke. There's a lot of things in there. There are terpenes. terpenes, there's butanes, there's all kinds of chemicals in wood smoke, as well as the particulate matter itself. You're breathing soot.
Yeah, we don't want it. We don't want to breathe it.
It's just not good. So it can affect all kinds of things, from your heart to your brain to all kinds of other things. So that's why we regulate that.
And that then, in some ways, leads us back to wood stoves, because there will be an EPA rating, I would suppose, on
there
these
is.
New ones.
Actually, every single wood stove being manufactured in the United States right now for residential use is regulated by the EPA. And if you have a retailer that's selling you a stove, they will have the EPA label right on the stove. It's mandatory that they have it there. So any reputable manufacturer today has to put out a stove that meets the EPA requirements, which can be an issue because they change. When I first started in 2016, we were operating under the 2015 EPA standard that said they could go to 4.5 microns per hour every stove. And then they tightened it in 2020 to only 2. Now, that's a huge factor. If you have to cut everything in more than half from your best stove before, that's a manufacturing challenge. But you know what? They've done it. So it's really impressive to see. And we have some manufacturers right here in North Idaho. Kuma Stoves, one of the best in the nation, is manufactured right in Athol, Idaho. So we have a lot of really good stoves. The Northwest is sort of a hotbed of really good stove manufacturers. Lopi is built over in the Seattle area. We have Regency up in British Columbia. They're really good stoves, and they all work real well.
All right. Well, let's get back to how important it is, especially here in the wintertime, and how the DEQ might be able to help encourage people to be thinking about the efficiency of their wood stoves and maybe help them do something about it.
Well, in the past, we have had a wood stove changeout program based on federal grants that we're able to get. A good example is the one in Pinehurst. I'm currently working with a wood stove exchange program in the town of St. Mary's. Now, St. Mary's is unique. They have the big Potlatch Deltic timber mill down there. And, of course, Potlatch is really concerned that if residential wood smoke is increasing pollution in that local community, that Potlatch is going to get all the blame. Well, they're going to get some of the blame because they're a big industrial situation. But there is a lot of residential wood smoke in that valley. So Potlatch is actually helping pay for wood stove changeouts, which is a huge benefit to their workers in their community. And I think it's really cool that we have a private-public partnership. DEQ is involved because we've done a lot of wood stove changeouts in the past, as I just said, in Pinehurst. And so we're using the same basic format. Curiously enough, the Nez Perce just got a great big federal grant to do exactly the same thing. So we work with these communities. We encourage, obviously, if your home is well insulated, that requires less heat, which means less wood being burned, less pollution. So weatherization in your home is something that we also work with a variety of people. Community Action Partnerships is one of our partners. We do all kinds of good stuff to help people understand that heating their home does have an effect, even if you're using a local product like wood.
Okay. Well, let's use an example. Say you're someone who's lived in a house a long time. You might be of modest means, and you've kind of been working with this old wood stove for a long time. What might a person like that do to try and, you know, get a new wood stove? What I'm basically asking, what if they can't really afford it? What can
right.
they do?
Well, again, one of the first things that I would do, I would go down to your local Community Action Partnership office. Every county has one. Many communities will have one. CAP is a national program funded through federal funding. It's part of the old LBJ anti-poverty routines that happened back in the 60s, and they're still around. They help people of low income achieve all kinds of things, from weatherization of their home to a replacement of furnaces. They can provide wood stoves if you need one. If you have an old one, they'll come and talk to me and I'll make recommendations. So CAP is a great resource. If you're still working, let's say you're on the edge of that, you're still paying taxes and stuff and slaving away and you're mad every time you have to write a check to the state government. One of the great things you can do is the state of Idaho has a tax deduction that'll pay for 80% of the cost of your wood stove over 3 years. So if you know that you're going to pay state taxes and you want to help reduce that tax burden, go get a new wood stove. You can take 40% of the cost of the stove the first year and 20% the next 2 years. So that cuts back quite a little bit.
That's pretty amazing because that combined with your savings on wood and all that, I bet that would just be a smart deal for a lot of people.
It really starts to pay for itself. Now, having said that, installation of a wood stove is not something you can just do yourself. Installation of a wood stove is really dependent on what your chimney looks like. Your venting system is of supreme importance. Think of it as a system. You know, your chimney is like your lungs. Your wood stove is like your heart. If you're missing either of them, you're toast. Same thing holds true with your wood stove. If you have a great wood stove and a crummy chimney, you're not going to work very well. And you can have the best chimney in the world, but a lousy wood stove, and you're still not going to get good results. You have to have a system, and the system has to be really well done. So to give you an idea of the 200 replacements I did in the Silver Valley, one chimney was up to speed. One.
Wow.
That's what? So, 0.5%. So yeah. Even I can do that math. But, you know, that is just unheard of. And because of that, an often overlooked benefit of the program that I was working down there is the increase in safety. All of a sudden, we were looking at all these crummy, old, rotten, pine, they're just horrible, horrible chimneys. So the fire department came to me afterwards and said, thank you for this program. It cut back on our chimney fires by like 90%. And I was like, great, you know, happy to help. So safety is another one of the big advantages of having a new wood stove and a decent chimney. And all of a sudden you're refurbishing your entire home for safety reasons, for efficiency, for lack of less pollution. It all makes sense.
Sure. Let me help me understand, though. Chimneys, are chimney replacements something people can get help with, or is that a more difficult place to get some financial aid?
It is more difficult. In the Pinehurst area, we actually included the chimney as part of our program, as well as any hearth issues. So like in front of your wood stove, you have to have an area clear of various things with a fireproof material. And so your hearth is an important part of it as well. Unfortunately, right now, we don't have any statewide program other than the statewide replacement program that I just told you about. But we do have some ideas in the future, and hopefully we'll be able to get those pushed through.
All right. And you get ideas from around the country, don't you? Because you're part of a larger, I don't know if it's called a task force, but it's a group of people that talk wood stoves.
Well, it's kind of twisted. I've always been a guy that sort of asked, you know, I figured that forgiveness is better than permission. So I was at a national conference a few years ago. The EPA puts on a national wood smoke conference, and I went to the first one, and I met up with a couple of compadres from the Northwest. And I said, you know, this is great to have this conference once every 2 years. Why don't we talk more often? And they said, yeah, that's a good idea. And so I started just getting a hold of them and saying, hey, what are you doing? And we were meeting about every month. It was me and a couple other folks. And then, you know, we invited a few more folks and a few more folks. And then the EPA found out what we were doing, and they got involved. And now it snowballed. So now I am currently the chair and moderator for one more month of the National, State, Local, and Tribal Residential Wood Smoke Working Group. And we've been recognized across the country as a voice of professionals that have been working on wood smoke issues for quite a while, particularly residential wood smoke. And so it's been really gratifying to me to see something like I say, I just started doing it. I didn't figure anybody would care. I finally did go to the head shed down in Boise and say, hey, I'm doing this. Is this okay? And I invited a few of our people in on the whole thing. And Hopefully they're listening, saying, keep going, gang, keep doing it. But I don't think anybody's listening.
Oh, dear. Well, I hope there'll be a replacement for you here in Idaho, because collaboration and cooperation makes such a difference in these types of things.
Well, I agree. And, you know, wood smoke is something that is often overlooked. Nobody really thinks about it. But in the Mountain West and in places like Vermont and Maine, other places in the Northwest, where they have similar issues to ours, anytime you have mountainous terrain, what happens is these little mountain valleys fill up with smoke. And at night, when we have that inversion layer that comes down virtually every night, we see it most often during fire season. And, you know, where in the morning when you wake up, you're coughing and you're wheezing, and by afternoon, that inversion lifts and it goes away. Well, in the wintertime, we have inversions that last all day.
Days, sometimes.
Weeks.
Yes.
And so all of a sudden, what happens is you're filling your special little valley full of smoke. And if you're in some of these little narrow valleys up in the mountains, you know, that might be you. It might be you and five or six neighbors, and that's it. You're producing your own pollution.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Right. It's like, I tell people, it's like living in a fishbowl.
Right.
And then larger communities, I was going to graduate school in Missoula, Montana, when they had it. They've finally banned all wood stoves in the town of Missoula. But I remember working at Snow Bowl Ski Resort and driving up to the mountain every day and kind of popping out of that layer and looking down on it half of the day. And then the inversion would lift and the air would be clean and everything would be beautiful. And then at night, boom. It was just right there. So literally like going down into a fog bank.
Dan, how do you feel about a city like Missoula banning all wood stoves when we have options that might actually work for some homeowners?
Missoula actually tried that for quite a while, but recognized before they had their ban, they didn't have the technology that we have today. Having said that, they're not going back. Missoula, as you may have known, has grown tremendously, even from the time that I was there back in the early 80s. So the population, if everybody had a wood stove, it would be just as bad as ever, even with the new technologies. It's a tough situation. Wood smoke in urban situations is really not the best bet.
So dense, so many people. It just doesn't really make sense, I guess.
You know, everybody's their own little fireplace, their own little burner. You know, and you see this every once in a while. For those of you in listening who have gone down to Coeur d'Alene lately or Spokane, there are apartment complexes that ban the use of charcoal fires because too many people making a little barbecue out back really pollutes that area, and that can be a problem.
Yeah, and sometimes they burn up their siding and stuff, too, but that's another matter.
It's all safety. Fire's fire. There's no getting around that, Julie.
That's right. I've seen that happen. That's why I mentioned it. Well, yes, okay. So the goal for you is to, of course, reduce air emissions, and monitoring and working on wood stoves is really so important, especially in the wintertime, and I'm so happy that our DEQ is doing that. Yeah, but let's circle back and talk about the things you need to really do the very best that you can with your wood stove.
Thanks. I got way ahead of myself. I have a tendency to do that. So, you know, a wood stove has three things that you have to have in a wood stove. First of all, get the right stove, and we talked about that. I have had people buy, you can go down to Ziggy's, and I'm not slamming Ziggy's at all. I'm just saying that you can get a pretty cheap wood stove. You can get a wood stove for about $800 that will be EPA certified, but it won't last very long. It'll be a, you know, cheaper construction, less durable. Catalytic combustor will be one of the old styles that doesn't last very long. And it'll cost you $300 every time you have to replace it. So it's not really economically a great idea. I recommend getting a higher end stove, get a Kuma, get a Regency, get something that's going to really work for you. And go talk to your local stove dealers. We have a couple of really good dealers, both in the Coeur d'Alene area as well as up here in Sandpoint. So go talk to your dealers and get the right stove. The right stove is really important. Second part of that, think of it as a three-legged stool. So the second part is burning the right wood. You know, everybody's out there looking for that buckskin tamarack 30 feet uphill from the truck. Well, that, you know, those are mythical at this point. You know, it's like a unicorn. But sometimes you might find one. And, you know, if you can find one like that, that's great, because tamarack is real dense wood. And for those of you out there, you may not know this, every species of wood is made out of the same stuff. It's all made out of cellulose. The only difference is density of the wood. So the denser the wood, oak, maple, things like that, hardwoods, are really, really dense. Some of the compressed logs, like the ones that they make, North Idaho Energy Logs up in Moyet Springs, is extremely dense. You can't stick a knife into one. They're just so dense. And that's what makes them really efficient firewood species. So you also have to control your moisture, 20% moisture or less. And the only way of really knowing that, you can whack pieces together and it sounds hollow. That's a good way to get started. But a moisture meter is really the best way. Take a moisture meter, split your wood, get into the middle of it, poke it in there and find out if you're actually burning 20% of moisture or less. That's super important. All the new stoves require 20% moisture or less. And that's hard to attain. If you cut your wood in the fall expecting it to burn in the winter, you're not going to have 20% moisture or less. Water does not burn, gang. That's what they use to put out fires. So that's one of the biggest problems that we have. Burning wet wood, everybody's had somebody throw a wet log on a campfire, and next thing you know, we're all choking and gagging and running away from the fire. So, and it just sits there and smolders. It doesn't burn very well. So use your campfire experience to your advantage. Does it make sense to take that same piece of wet wood and throw it into your wood stove and expect to get warmth out of it? No, it won't work. The last thing is really important. It's a combination of your dry wood and your new appliance. It's just like these new cars are not like grandpa's cars. You know, I mean, I still am looking for the dimmer switch over on the left-hand side of the floorboard in my car, and they're not there anymore. Every new stove has a different operating procedure that you have to follow. Read your manual. And it always amazes me how few people actually read all the way through their manual. So that was a big part of my job in Pinehurst, was explaining that their manual is just exactly that. Instructions on how to operate your stove correctly. So that three-legged stool, the right device, burning the right wood, the right way is the way to go. And if you do that, you're going to really, really be happy with your wood heat, and you won't be polluting.
Okay, and I want to back up to the wood for another moment. Say you cannot get that great buckskin tamarack. Other woods that are not as dense can still be used, but I would have to assume that they'd be very dry. You know, having them very dry would be key also.
That it doesn't matter what wood you use, you have to have it dry.
Okay.
And so even if you're burning, you know, white fir is considered sort of crummy wood to burn. It still burns. Ponderosa pine is considered kind of crummy to burn, but it still burns, so long as it's good and dry.
Okay.
Now, what it will do is, because for the size of the log, it's not as dense, and there isn't that much cellulose within them, so they'll burn faster. They may have more pitch in them, because pine has a tendency to have a lot of pitch. Pitch holds moisture in, so there's some problems with that. But if you get it dry, it'll still burn and burn well.
Okay, good to know. Well, Dan, for listeners who have that old wood stove here in Sandpoint or in the area and, you know, are thinking about making a change, what would you say for them to do? I know first go down and see if there are any programs that might help them purchase it, but this seems like it would be the time of year to be thinking about getting going. I mean, you don't want to be doing it in December.
Right, right. As a matter of fact, all of our wood stove changeout programs, we design for our vendors to go out in the springtime, because that's, frankly, their slow time. Spring to summer is their slowest time, because, again, nobody thinks about heating your house until, like, November, and by then it's too late. First of all, you haven't got enough time to dry your wood. Secondly, you don't have, you know, the vendors are, at that point, they're scrambling to get caught up. So this is not the best of all times to talk about it, but it's always a good time to remind people that to think about the future. So I would suggest what you do is, first of all, if you can get a stove manufacturer to come out and look at your home, they'll inspect your chimney. They'll tell you right up if your chimney is in good enough shape to handle a new wood stove. They'll look at your old wood stove and they'll say, wow, how many square feet are you trying to heat with this stove? They'll size a stove appropriately for your house. Most people get too big a stove. And the problem with too big a stove is like having too big an engine in your car. You have a tendency to want to use every horsepower. Uh-huh. You know, you want to fill that box up with wood. Well, if you do that and it's burning correctly, it's going to get so hot in your house, you're going to have to open a window, open a door, you know, stick your head out the window and pant.
Wasted energy.
It's yeah, you've gone too far. You've done too much. So what you want to do is size the stove appropriately for the amount of time. Talk to them about what your expectations are. Do you really need an overnight burn, or are you willing to get up in the morning to a relatively cold home and go fire up your stove again? They'll talk to you about your options there. Do you need a long burning stove? Can you get by with a non-catalytic stove, one of the air induction stoves that won't burn as long, but it'll burn nice and hot? I mean, if you're at home and you can feed it every 5 or 6 hours, great. Those non-cats work really well. If you want something to burn all night long, get a hybrid. They're really nice. And they'll have up to a 30-hour burn time. And, you know, that's exceptional, and that's with really good wood. But, yeah. You know, you can do it.
So, and then, I mean, if folks do need to order a wood stove, I assume that might take a little while now. Or are they just sitting around in the stove stores?
I've been to the Kuma stove down in Athol, and no, they're not just a whole pile of them sitting around. So, yeah, it does make a difference. Go talk to your retailers and find out what they can provide for you. I know a lot of people, like, for instance, Regency, they're a major supplier up in British Columbia, and they do it order by order. So if you have an order in, it'll take about 6 weeks for that stove to come in, a month and a half, which is really not that bad considering, you know, it's international imports and all that other good stuff. Lopi stoves from the Mukilteo area over north of Seattle, they can get you a stove really, really quickly. Kuma is usually pretty good. The Kuma retailers around here usually have a few in stock. And again, running down to the factory and picking them up is not that big a deal. I got to tell you, I'm going to give a shout out to the Kuma people because they have been instrumental in helping me understand how stoves work, were very generous with their time and showing me exactly how these stoves work and what they do. And, you know, the Freeman family down there is really, really well recognized in the wood stove world. It's great fun to talk to those guys. But another thing that I would like to bring up is installing them properly is really an important thing. And I recommend NFI, and NFI is the National Fireplace Institute. Now, to get certified in NFI, you have to take a self-study class. It takes about 5 months for you to really get studied up on this whole thing. Then you have to take a proctored exam. This is like taking a landscape architect or an engineering proctored exam to become licensed. And then once you get that, you know everything there is to know about wood stoves. And it's really, really great training. I went through the entire course. At one time, I was a certified installer. I've never installed a stove in my life. But you want to know something? It was great training, and it allowed me to talk with a certain amount of expertise to our vendors, and they really appreciated that. The Kuma guys told me that. But we have a couple of really good NFI-certified installers in North Idaho, one right here in Sand Point. So I would strongly suggest that you call an NFI-certified person Once you start talking to somebody certified by the National Fireplace Institute, you know you're talking to the right people.
Yeah, I can see how that would make sense when we do all this work to get the right stove and the right chimney and the right wood. And then if it's not installed properly, that would be quite disappointing, I would think.
It just doesn't work. It's not appropriate. So NFI certification or the chimney sweep guys, they're usually pretty good as well with the chimney sweep certification. One other thing, when it comes down to wood stoves, it's just like your car. They require maintenance, you guys. And I know everybody wants to just go up on the chimney and run a brush down the chimney every once in a while because it's cheap. Don't do it. Get a real good maintenance program going. Call your chimney sweep. Professional chimney sweeps will be clean. They'll be nice. It's not Dick Van Dyke scrambling around on your roof singing, you know, chim chimney, chim chimney. But
do they at least have the hat?
Some. Their truck will have the hat on the side of it. But no, and the guys that are doing chimney sweep work that I've dealt with are fantastic. And they have saved lives, I'm here to tell you. There's been several situations where I replaced a wood stove and the poor installer came out shaking his head going, I don't know what, why are these people alive today? There was so much creosote buildup in their chimney that they would have been toast.
Yeah, it's worth it, people. It is worth it. It's worth your life.
It's expensive, but so is car maintenance and so is, you know, life is expensive, I have found.
Yes. Well, that's a great recommendation too. So the time, it's not too late, though, for folks if they were wanting to change out their wood stove this year.
There's still time. The biggest thing is, let's say you have an old wood stove and you got a whole pile of really nice dry firewood sitting back there. That makes a great time to get a new wood stove because you're all set. You already have all of your fuel sitting right there. You're ready to rock and roll. I would get your chimney looked at. Most of the time, it's a simple relining of a chimney. They put a metal liner up in there that's double insulated, or they can figure out another way of insulating that pipe. The pipe has to stay warm in order for the wood stove to work because it has to draft correctly. In the old days, you used to just open it up and you'd have a really tall, hot single pipe and it would self-regulate. But no, the new stoves have to have a nice warm liner. So putting a liner in, you know, is about $800 for a good liner, depending on who's doing it and how well they do it and what your chimney looks like to begin with. And then hooking up your stove. So it's a great way to go. It really helps to have a new wood stove in.
Yeah, and if a person can cut their wood use down by almost half, it's not all that many years till you've, justified the investment.
Right. If you start looking at, the cost of fuel, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about natural gas, electricity, fuel oil, they all keep going up in price. And, you know, where do we get our firewood? I don't care how you get it, unless you have a tree in your front yard that you happen to knock down and turn into firewood, you're going to have to transport it. You're going to have to cut it up with a chainsaw. You're going to have to split it, probably with a splitter, unless you have an 18-year-old with a strong back and a weak mind. They can do your wood splitting. That's what my mom relied on. I was there. I did a lot of that. But that was oak in Wisconsin. So I'm telling you, I was a muscular young fella when I was a young fella.
Very good. Good for the arms.
But, you know, wood costs money. And where do we get it and how do we put it in? So if you can burn 60% of your fuel load every year, again, whether you're burning anything, you're saving money.
Yeah, it's a good deal. Now, Dan, I had intended to ask you this question earlier, but If you haven't been able to find, for example, a program that will help you save money on that new stove, and you definitely want it, but you just don't quite have the money for it, are there loan programs? Can people get loans for these types of improvements?
You know, interestingly enough, I'm working with a bank. Again, I'm working on a wood stove program down in St. Mary's right now, down in Benoit County. And the local bank, the Banner Bank, has got a low-income loan that they will give you. And so it's a great way of going. That really works for low-income people who are really struggling to make ends meet. A lot of people have come to me and said, I really want to participate in your program, but I do not have the ability for any out-of-pocket costs.
Sure.
We have limits on how much money we're going to subsidize the individuals. So a lot of times there's out-of-pocket costs. Well, even $1,000 is something that a lot of people can't pull off. So they go down to the Banner Bank, and they talk to the tellers down there, and they explain that they're part of this program, and they cut them a really, really low-interest loan. And it's a short-term loan. They have to pay it back quickly, but it's a really good deal. So I would suggest you do the same thing locally. Sometimes Community Action Partnership can help you in that regard. They may have some loan programs or some federal programs that are out there for low-income folks.
Yeah. Very good. Well, yeah. All right. So what I'm hearing is that these types of programs combined with some really nice tax incentives, if you're still working,
mm-hmm.
can make it pretty doable.
It's very doable. If you if you want to replace your wood stove, it's as doable as replacing your furnace, your water heater, or any of the other things. All of these things are expensive. They all use energy, and they're all just working at you. One thing that we've been trying to encourage is for people to use some of the new heat pump technologies, not necessarily to replace their wood stove, but to augment their wood stove. So like a good example, a mini split system, they go into a home, they're electrically driven, it's an air source heat pump is what they are, and they cool your air as well as warm it. And they're extremely efficient. They're in the upper 90s of efficiency. And they're nice because you can air condition. Your wood stove can do a lot of things, but it can't cool your house down.
Yeah.
So by combining those two technologies, we're able to really, really take good use of our energy resources. You've got the backup in case of an electrical outage, but you've got the advantage of air conditioning and a really efficient form of heat.
Yeah, I like it. I think that sounds like a great way to go for so many people that would live in this area and be open to improving their heating situation.
I think so. I think it's a great way to go. And so we've been encouraging people. Interestingly enough, that's a huge part of the Nez Perce grant. They're doing both. If the Nez Perce tribe has been awesome to work with, I got to give a shout out to the people down there. That tribe really cares about their members, and they're working real hard at that. And their air quality people are top notch. So they were able to get a big federal grant through the Infrastructure Act, and they're working on a combination of weatherization, heat pumps, as well as upgrading wood stoves and chimneys. And so it's going to work out really, really well for their population.
What a great way to use that infrastructure bill money. I'm happy to hear that. Well, Dan, we've almost used up an entire hour. We've just got a couple minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say, either as a summary or any additional info about wood stoves?
Well, I just want to thank you, Julie, for inviting me up here. This has been a pleasure. This is like third interview with you, and I'm happy to head off into retirement with a positive feeling towards you and the station and all the people here in Sandpoint. And I wish all of you the best. I'm not dying. I'm not passing out. I'm not going anywhere, but I am going to go and do something different for a while here in my retirement. So
good for you. I hope you just have the most best fun retirement anybody ever had.
Well, I am a recreation professional, and so I think I'm going to recreate.
What a great idea. Well, all right, Dan Smith, I would like to thank you for joining us today. You've been just so informative. Soon to be retired North Idaho Air Quality Coordinator for the DEQ, and we have really learned a lot from you and your visits here. So thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.